And now, winner of 3 Wisconsin Broadcasters Awards for Excellence.
In your face, Milwaukee!
Live from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studios, this is Chuck and Winkler on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Well, here we go again. Good morning, Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. It is Chuck and Winkler. He is Chuck Freeman. I'm Radio Joe Zanzola, filling in once again for Bart Winkler, who is in Seattle. He will be at tonight's Packers versus Seahawks game. Chuck, I can't believe we're getting you ready for another football game tonight. Didn't we just have one, like, yesterday? I mean,
Yeah, that's the beauty of this. That's the way it is.
And then no football for 10 days.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I don't get it. Why the quick turnaround out to the West Coast? But it's just like, hurry up and play. And, you know, these guys got through some injuries and all that, but... And plus, you're playing, you know, a team, if you look at them, they're not, Seattle's not as good as they were in the past, but still a real good team you're going to have to play. I mean, a playoff team. We're not playing the Oakland Raiders here.
Yeah, the Seahawks are not that bad.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Concerned about it?
Concerned about the game? Well, I mean, we'll get to our predictions coming up here at 7 o'clock, and we'll want to hear from you guys. But... I just think with the fact that that Packer-Dolphin game got flexed out to 3:25, that's 3 extra hours that now you lose to have any form of recovery, and then you got to get right back into the film room on Monday. You got to go right through all your progressions and stuff, and then on Tuesday you have a non-padded practice. And again, Tuesday's typically your off day. And then you get on a plane Tuesday night, you fly out to Seattle, you try to adjust your body to, you know, West Coast time again, and you go through another short practice, and now here we are. You're playing again. I just feel like it's all rushed. And I understand that when you make an NFL schedule, it's dictated by computers and stuff, but this is a little unfair. It really is. Again, we talked about this yesterday with the Packers. It would be much more manageable if they played Minnesota tonight and then Seattle 10 days from now. That would just make more sense because it's not even an hour-long flight from Green Bay to Minneapolis. You allow yourself more time to reset your body, and then you go at it. And then you fly right on back. It's not a four-hour flight. And then you're off 10 days, and then you get ready for the West Coast road trip, and you can plan it the right way. This has been, I just feel like it's been forced down the Packers' throats, and now tonight... I think it's going to be a disadvantage for him. I really do.
All that said, I like the Packers' chances of winning this game tonight and getting back into the playoff picture. I really think, as I said in the update, the loser of tonight's game eliminated between Seattle and the Packers. And Seattle's lost a few games in a row here. Packers just won this game in Miami. But if you can win this game, you know, you're in decent shape. Now, if you look at it, the Vikings and Bears, they play Sunday night. And the Bears play Sunday night. And then they got to turn around and play an afternoon game Thursday in Detroit.
But for them, they only have to fly 45 minutes to Detroit.
That's the caveat there. But still, you're playing 4 hours later and about 6 hours, 7 hours, 8 hours earlier than the Packers would have played, because you're playing in the afternoon. You're playing 11:30 in the morning,
right?
Even earlier than the normal NFL start of noon.
Those Detroit games on Thanksgiving are always at 11:30. They never put them in the afternoon. They never put them at night. It's always the first game of Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving slate.
Yep, 11:30, and then Dallas plays at the 3 o'clock game. The Packers have played in both of those games. The Packers have played in Detroit. We've seen them play there, and then we've seen them play in Dallas as well. In that game, especially in the 90s, they had a tough one down there in Dallas back in 1994, I want to say, against Jason Garrett, who is the quarterback of the Cowboys right now. He was the third string quarterback on the day. Aikman was hurt. I think the backup Bernie Kosar was hurt, so they went with Jason Garrett as their starting quarterback, and Jason Garrett came out and beat the Packers and Brett Favre. And that was like a sign where, hey, you know what? They're never going to win this game down. They're never going to beat the Cowboys down in Irving.
How many times back in the early to mid-90s did the Cowboys always get the last laugh over the Packers?
Many times. Many times in the old stadium, in Irving's, in Texas Stadium, it was called, which has been flattened. You know, they've been the new one, Jerry World.
Jerry World is awesome.
But playoffs, many playoff losses, 93, 94, 95. They're, it lost in the NFC Championship game in 95. They'd always have a regular season loss, heartbreaker, and then a playoff loss down to Dallas. So they were always guaranteed, it seemed, to play those guys twice a year, one regular season, one postseason, and they'd lose both of them. Finally got them in the 97, even in 96 when the Packers won the Super Bowl. They went down there on Monday Night Football, and that's when Chris Bonier, their kicker, Bonio, kicked seven field goals, an NFL record, to beat the Packers. So the Packers didn't get them until, I want to say, 97. By then, the Cowboys had time had passed, and they were on the downside.
Yeah, I remember growing up as a kid, you know, the memories that I have, you know, being 4, 5, 6, 7 years old was right in that stretch there where the Packers could never get by Dallas every single year. No matter what it came down to, the Packers would always lose to the Cowboys. And it always frustrated me as this little kid, you know, wearing my Packers shirts and stuff. It always sucked, and it was finally refreshing when they were, correct me if I'm wrong, Chuck, the year the Packers got to the NFC Championship game against Carolina, Carolina beat Dallas
yes.
to get to that point, right?
Yes, and again, that's the that was a Cowboy team the Packers had beat earlier in the year. Or no, that was the year, no, let me get that right. Packers had lost down in Dallas, and that Cowboy team was decent, but they were on the downside. And they were coming off a Super Bowl championship the year before.
Against Pittsburgh.
And Carolina beat them, yes.
Yeah.
And in Carolina, was coached by Dom Capers, came up to Green Bay in really, really cold weather, and the Packers beat them.
Our old buddy, Dom Capers.
Yes, but Capers was the first coach of the Carolina the Panthers, and the Packers beat him.
Well, I don't know how we got off on that tangent, but it would be nice for the Packers to get this win coming up tonight. I think, again, it's going to be very tough for them, and there are things working against them. The injuries came out. The four guys that there was talk that they were going to maybe fly them out at the last second to get them to play, which included guys like Kentrell Bryce, Nick Perry, Randall Cobb, Kevin King. Those guys have all been ruled out for the game. So, again, another week without Kevin King and a little extra help for your secondary, which is a little bit depleted at the safety position. And, I mean, I got to think they're going to be doing a lot of rotating tonight between Tremont Williams and Josh Jones. And, you know, we saw Raven Green step up in that Dolphins game. We'll see how much playing time he gets tonight. That's still, Chuck, one of the areas that I am a little concerned about is that safety position.
Yeah, it is. Raven Green played a nice game last week. Obviously, young guy out of James Madison, undrafted rookie, got a lot to learn. Had the safety blitz. And of course, he had the on the fake punt, the direct snap, took that for a first down. But you know, there's they're obviously, Pete Carroll's gonna look at for some ways that they could beat that guy, and we'll see what happens tonight. But he's gonna put in a tough spot. He's gonna get a lot of snaps tonight.
So we'll continue to get into Packers and Seahawks here throughout the course of the show today. We'll talk with Michael Cohen, our insider, at a special time, 9 a.m. We'll get his thoughts on it. We also have fantasy football today with Kevin Payne, rotowire.com at 8:35, and some Badger talk with Ben Wargle from BadgersInsiders.com. He's going to join us at 7:35. Now, there was some basketball being played last night. Chuck, I know you were at the Fiserv Forum. The Bucks losing 116-113. And I'm a little sour about last night, because that was a game, even though the Bucks struggled mightily shooting the three, that was a game that they got hot in the third quarter, they were in control in the fourth quarter, and then they just let it slide away to Memphis.
Yeah, yeah. Disappointing loss. Gasol and Conley, their two stars, put the team on their back. Yeah, I mean, that one could have slipped completely away from Memphis, because you know, they blew a 15-point lead. Bucks take an 8-point lead, and That one was going completely in the Bucks' direction, and then Memphis turned it right around. That's tough to do, and they did, with their defense. But when you shoot 9 of 35 at the three-pointer arc like the Bucks did last night, you know, when you're not in your threes, you could have losses last night. So they had some energy. They didn't come out with a lot of energy, but they got back into the game. Connaughton played with a lot of energy, got them back. Maker gave them some energy. But the stat line you look at, 9 of 35 from the three-point arc at home, and you know, that's you live by the three and you die by the three, and the Bucks died by the three last night.
Yeah, and Pat Connaughton continues to fill up the stat sheet. I mean, coming off the bench, he played 27 minutes last night. He was 6 of 9 from the field, 2 of 5 from three-point land. Had missed two crucial free throws, though, down the stretch, which really hurt. Him and Eric Bledsoe both. That was annoying. Left those points out there. But nonetheless, Connaughton still had a great game. 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and 16 points. I don't know if you're a guy, Chuck, that likes, you know, the plus-minus statistic, because sometimes you can make arguments for why it is such an important stat and why it can be such a bad stat, too. Pat Connaughton, a plus 21 last night.
Mm-hmm.
Thon Maker, plus 17. Tony Snell, plus 14. And then you flip it. Chris Middleton, when he was on the floor last night, minus 19. And Malcolm Brogdon, minus 30.
Yeah, I don't go too much on that plus and minus stuff. You know, all I know is two things. Statistical numbers, shooting percentage, how they rebounded, how they played defensive. Well, I mean, a few different things. The eye test and how they played defensively. And the Bucks, you know, again, they didn't play a lot of spirit last night. And coming off a four-game road trip, there was a little bit of a hangover, you might say. Not in a drunken way, but in a hangover just coming off the road trip. You know, they came back Sunday night, had a few days, but they lacked some energy last night. And you can't do that against any NBA team. And Memphis is a playoff-bound team. And you kind of laid an egg there against those guys. And you didn't play well. You didn't play well. You didn't play well enough at home to win that game.
They started off slow in the first half. They got back into it before half. And then in the third quarter, they started to let it slide again. And then they went on this ridiculous 27-4 run. At one point, they had an 8-point lead in the fourth quarter. And then again, they just let it slide. Mike Budenholzer got ejected in this game for just asking a simple question to a referee that's only reffed in 13 total NBA games in his entire career, and he just tossed Budenholzer, and it was just on a push on Malcolm Brogdon. He was ruled that he was out of bounds, but he was clearly pushed. I don't know how you don't review that.
Yeah, well, I mean, they review fouls, out of bounds fouls, which the Bucks got called for one with 2.9 seconds left. They got called for an out of bounds foul on Ersan Ilyasova. So you're able to review a foul there, but you can't review other fouls.
Right, a push.
Yeah. But I guess if you review all day, if you review that, you're reviewing calls all day. And how much, you know what I'm saying? You'd be go first quarter, second quarter. I think a fourth quarter call is just as much as important as a second quarter call can cost you. So where do you stop at the calls? That's the question about it. But I agree with you, but it's like you can keep going on all day and reviewing calls.
You could.
Just like penalties in the NFL.
I understand it. You open up a whole new can of worms.
And then you're sitting there all day.
Right.
Was there holding? Was there not holding? Was there a foul? Was there a body check there? Was it a charge? Or was it a blocking call in basketball? You could do that. Then you're going to extend the game a little bit. So by doing it all day, and I just think it could just you really get a kind of a chunky game there if you're just going over the score table all the time and reviewing fouls. But maybe in the last 4 minutes, but I think fouls early in the game count just as much as they do in the end of the game too.
Sure they do. Absolutely. I don't think it was right for Mike Budenholzer to get ejected last night, but the one thing I do like about Bud, and the many things I like about Bud, he fights for his players and he will have their backs.
Yeah, I thought once he came marching out there, and he got by the free throw line, and I think probably the official thought he was charging at him, and that was an instinct call by the official. And
again, this is from an official. That,
young guy, yes.
Yeah, that doesn't have much experience. He's just getting his feet wet.
Just getting started in the NBA, but I think he thought that that Coach Bud was charging at him a little bit, even though he wasn't, but he was marching out there by him, and that's why instinctively the ref teed him up. But, you know, Conley missed the free throw anyway.
Right. You did have an opportunity with like 2.1 seconds to get something in on the inbound. And look, the Grizzlies played that really well. They defended really well. Chris Middleton had to like throw it up because he couldn't get a clear open look. Mm-hmm. And that was the game last night.
Yeah, they lost. They defended the perimeter on that situation because the Bucks only have 2.3 seconds left. And that was that. They come away with a loss. Giannis had 31. But the bottom line is here, man, the early fourth quarter, he had an 8-point lead and it just fell apart. It just fell apart. And Mike Conley hit a big shot toward the end of that game. Gasol hit a three, but Conley was dribbling around the perimeter, ran through a double team, was scrambling, hit an off balance shot in the lane. It's like, man, that's why Mike Conley's a great player.
Yeah, he is a very good player. Completely agree. 9 of 16 from the field last night, 26 points. For Conley, again, as the Grizzlies knock off the Bucks, 116-113. We can talk more about this coming up. But, Chuck, there was something that really bothered you last night at the Fiserv Forum. And when you sent me the – well, when you told me to go look at your Twitter, saw the picture, I thought about it, and then I thought about it again, and I'm kind of in agreement with you. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. It is Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. We're here in the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studios. Again, a lot to get to this morning. We're going to talk some Bucks, but of course, Packers and Seahawks getting you ready. We'll want your predictions coming up at 7 o'clock. He's Chuck Freeman. I'm Radio Joe. Got more coming up next here on The Fan.
Rodgers with a first and goal to the end zone. Touchdown. Devontae Adams, a 7-yard laser thrown by Aaron Rodgers.
The green and gold have high hopes for Thursday night in Seattle.
And we've got you covered. It's a pick and save football Thursday on The Fan. Brought to you by your local pick and save stores, where Wisconsin saves on groceries.
That's right. Good morning, Chuck and Winkler. Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. It is indeed a football Thursday. Getting you ready for Packers and Seahawks. He's Chuck Freeman. I'm Radio Joe Zanzola from the Bill Michaels Show. I'm in for Bart today. So I wanted to get back before we, because coming up here in just a little bit, we are going to take a trip down memory lane. A place that I think many Packer fans are afraid to go down to. Some that are still annoyed to this very day about it, but we will go back to what happened in 2014 in the NFC Championship game against Seattle, because it is still hard to fathom what went wrong in that game. That's coming up here in about 15 minutes. But Chuck, last night, you know, we were texting back and forth and trying to figure out what we wanted to do tomorrow, and you said, take a look at my Twitter account. So you can follow Chuck at Chuck Freeman. I go there, and I'm looking at the Fiserv Forum, a picture you take, and a lot of empty seats. Now, the thing is, on a typical weeknight game, that's normal. All the years at the Bradley Center, mm-hmm. weeknight game, you're lucky if it's half full. But it's the first year of the new arena.
Yeah, this is what I was a little surprised at. When the Bradley Center was first built, and it opened up, and even carrying through the 90s, it was packed. There were people coming to that place, and it was packed. And Bucks had some bad teams, but it was still, you'd always draw good crowds. So I'm surprised with, here we got one of the best teams the Bucks have had. All right. Even during the Bradley Center days. And the first year of the arena, this beautiful state-of-the-art arena, I guessed every night it would be a tough ticket. Maybe I was over-evaluating it a little bit. But I thought every night at this new arena, it would be tough to get a ticket. It would be an event, and especially if the Bucks get off to a good start, which they did. But it's not been the case so far, and I'm a little surprised at that.
Yeah, usually in your, I don't know, you want to call it a honeymoon season.
Yeah.
When you have a new arena like that, I'd like to think everyone wants to go check it out, even if it is on a weeknight. I mean, that is the next big thing in this city. And correct me if I'm wrong, Chuck, when it came to Miller Park in its first year, a lot of people were going to games.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were terrible. They regularly would have, 43,000 out there at Miller Park. because people want to take in the new facility. And, you know, there's still people who go out to games, you know, because they love the atmosphere at Miller Park. Now, they had 16,800 at the game last night, and I thought there was even less than that. And it seems like the one other thing this five-serve form has, that the start of the third quarter, people don't go back to their seats a lot. I think people are still looking around the facility, that people haven't gone back to their seats at the third quarter because it seems a little empty. And that's when I took that picture. But, you know, the bottom line is I thought sellouts every night at the new five-serve form, and especially with the way the Bucks are playing right now. I thought you'd come back last night and that place would be packed, and I was wrong.
I'm looking at ticket prices here for the Pfizer Forum, because one of the things that we heard before this thing opened was ticket prices were probably going to go up. There's more seats in the lower bowl in this particular stadium than there is in these, you know, the upper deck. So you can still get tickets. Like, I'm looking at Bucks versus Denver coming up next Monday night, because I think it's going to be a sellout Friday against Jabari Parker and the Bulls. One would think. It's a Friday night game. It's 8:30, though, which is sort of stupid. But it's a Friday night game against the Bulls. I'd like to think that game is sold out. You look at Bucks versus Nuggets Monday night. The cheapest tickets I can find are $18 a piece. I got $21, $28, $29. Mm-hmm. And then once you get into like Section 208, it's $43. And then it goes on from there. But it seems like the average ticket price is somewhere in the 40s or 50s, but you can still get relatively cheap tickets for $18 a pop. Yeah.
I ran into some people I knew who had problems giving away their tickets last night. Some guys I knew who they had two extra tickets, and they could not give away their tickets last night. And thus, they had to leave empty, because there was nobody. They had a four-pack, and they couldn't find two people to go to the game last night. So that's, again, that's a little surprising. Maybe I misjudged. I apparently did, and I thought that it would be similar to when the Bradley Center and Miller Park opened up, Joe, that there'd be people just dying to get into this new place and to see the Bucks play, since they're playing so well.
Well, hopefully it gets a little bit better, because after all, you do have a basketball team right now that's 10-4, despite the fact that they lost last night. They are off to a pretty impressive start against a schedule that's been one of the toughest in the NBA. I'd like to think, as we go along here, there will be more people showing up. I was looking at tickets for this Friday night. The cheapest ticket I can find against Jabari Parker and the Bulls, $51. So, again, I'd like to think there are a lot of people showing up for that game on Friday night. That's going to be a really good game. And Jabari Parker has not been able to figure it out in Chicago so far. There's been some drama down there. The Bulls team is not that good. And that should be a game the Bucks should be able to take care of business against. I mean, it's...
Yeah, but don't be surprised. But I mean, with the NBA, I think the Bucks will come back and be all right. And you know, they got a tough one next week. They got four tough games at the... I almost said the Kohl Center. The Pfizer Forum. It is partly the Kohl Center. He donated $100 million to it at the Pfizer Forum because they have... Phoenix won't be... I mean, shouldn't be as difficult, but they have...
Denver, Portland...
Three good West Coast teams coming in. Three of the four are really good.
A lot of rematches from what they had.
Yeah. So, you know, disappointing loss last night. Those are going to happen. But, you know, they had they contested Middleton's three-point try at the end. Everybody knew he was going to get the ball. But I'm going to credit the Memphis Grizzlies with, you know, having their two stars lead the way. You know, because Memphis lives and dies with those two guys, Gasol and Mike Conley, and those guys delivered.
They sure did. The Bucks lose 116-113. They come up short, despite the fact going on a 27-4 run in the third quarter. Pat Connaughton had a really nice game off the bench, but still, Bucks are unable to get the job done. They are now 10-4 on the season, and they'll take on the Chicago Bulls at the Forum coming up tomorrow night. On the other side, we will take a trip down memory lane and go through all the insanity that went down in a very crucial matchup in Seattle between the Packers and the Seahawks back in 2014 in that NFC Championship game, a game that the Packers should have been going to the Super Bowl, and they didn't. It is pretty crazy to look back on all the things that didn't go right in that game. I try to look at it as comedy now. Maybe it still stings for you. We'll get into that coming up next. It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries in the Bryan and Stratton College Athletic Studios, and it is a Pick and Save Football Thursday here on The Fan.
Rodgers with a first and goal to the end zone. Touchdown. Devontae Adams, a 7-yard laser thrown by Aaron Rodgers.
The green and gold have high hopes for Thursday night in Seattle.
And we've got you covered. It's a Pick and Save Football Thursday on The Fan. Brought to you by your local Pick and Save stores, where Wisconsin saves on groceries.
Good morning. A high today of 37. 25 out right now. Hopefully you guys are staying warm out there. It's Chuck and Winkler on The Fan. Chuck Freeman, Cody Graham producing. I'm Radio Joe in for Bart today. So, Packers and Seahawks tonight, as we all know. We're going to have the Palermo's Green and Gold postgame show to follow with Bill Michaels and Gary Ellerson. But as we have seen, even though the Seahawks are not the same Seahawks team with the Legion of Boom, the Packers still cannot find a way to win in Seattle. It has been a thorn in their side for the longest time. And the one game that a lot of Packer fans will always look back as one of those moments where you could have looked at it a million different ways. They should have won that game against the Seahawks in January of 2015 in the NFC Championship game. And Chuck, it is, I don't know about you, it does still leave a little bit of a sting for me as a fan, constantly thinking about that game because they had it in their grasp. Does it still leave a mark for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I remember the way, the day well. Yeah, I remember it was the first game on Championship Sunday. And yeah, I remember it really well. Thinking that the game was in the bag, thinking it was over, it was done with, man. That, I got my car to take my kid back to my ex's house. And, you know, I had to drop him off by 5 o'clock because if you don't drop him off by 5 o'clock, she has a fit. So I had to get him there by 5 o'clock. And I'm listening to the game on the radio. And things are starting to unravel a little bit. And I'm like, okay, no, it'll be okay. A couple of bad things happened to him. Pass interferences and all that. You know, and then I dropped him off. Then I went to this hotel lobby, which wasn't too far from our house, because I didn't have time to go back home. Because, like, man, this is starting to unravel a little bit. So watched the game in a hotel lobby, the rest of it, and could not believe it as one bad thing after another happened to the Packers, and I drove home. And once it got to overtime, I knew. It got to overtime, and I was like, man, this one is done. This one is over. And, of course, you know, Seattle got the ball. Aaron never saw the ball in overtime. And Wilson threw that ball up in the air, and that long pass, and he just knew it was going to drop down on the receiver's hands, and it did.
But of course, yeah.
It was just frustrating. I did not watch the AFC Championship game after that. Then went home, didn't even turn the TV set on. Didn't want to see it. And I remember Mike Wicked, who was my partner at the time, and I came on and just maybe it probably was the most calls we've ever taken in one day. It might have been the most listened to day ever in our 13 years that this radio station has been on the air. The Fan has been on the radio. It might have been the most listened to and the most maybe active day on the radio station. It was disappointing because they were within. And I was making my reservations for Seattle, and all I had to do was punch the button. And I wasn't jinxing them. I don't believe in that stuff. All I had to do was push the send button into where I was going. So I had it on my phone. I had it all ready to go. So I'm sitting in this lobby. And just get this onside kick, and okay, I can push send. And one thing after another, and I finally, it got to overtime, and I just X'd out of all that stuff and didn't even and I knew. I said, once they got the overtime, this game, they're not going to win this. There's no Super Bowl now. So, Yeah. One of the most disappointing losses in our of our sports teams that I've ever been a part of.
Yeah. It is interesting to go back and look at all the crap that went wrong in this particular game, because it's if any one of these particular things went right for the Packers, they're probably going to win that football game. And it was just a comedy of errors. J.R. Radcliffe, the Journal Sentinel, he did this a while ago. He put out the top 15 things that happened in January of 2015 in that NFC Championship game. All the things that went crazy. I remember when you and Wicket were leading up to that game, Chuck, one of the biggest questions was Aaron Rodgers. And he had the calf injury. Remember this?
Yes. Calf watch.
Yes.
Yeah, calf watch the entire week. Calf watch for multiple weeks, really. Well, that was the thing that came in at number 15. I'm going to kind of go through this list here all the way up to number one. But calf watch was the first big thing, was how healthy was Aaron Rodgers going to be? How well could he get out of the pocket and make throws on the run? Aaron Rodgers did not have a great game. There wasn't much offense in this game to begin with, but part of the reason was Aaron Rodgers was kind of held in check in the pocket. So calf watch was the first big thing coming in at number 15. This is from J.R. Radcliffe's list in the Journal Sentinel. Number 14 was Clay Matthews. And the whole question was, where was Clay Matthews on the field? Matthews struggled with a couple bad penalties in the game, but speculation is that he was not injured and either took himself out or was taken out. And remember, Mike McCarthy didn't even know about where Clay Matthews was on the field. Which, again, how do you not know?
Yeah.
How do you not know that?
You're the head coach. You're managing that game. You're managing that game. He did not know. And this is when Clay was actually a productive player.
Right.
4 years ago.
Number 13, Jordy drops it. This goes back to the first quarter at the 5:53 mark following a special teams turnover. Aaron Rodgers threw a second and goal pass to Jordy Nelson, something that he should have caught, and instead goes incomplete. Green Bay settles for a field goal, and they get 3 points out of that. Touchdown opportunity there, dropped. Number 12, taunting. This happened at 10:37 in the first quarter, in the midst of a first quarter that could have yielded far more points. Ha-ha, Clinton Dix intercepted a deflected pass by Russell Wilson. But then what happened was Mike Daniels gets penalized 15 yards for taunting, and you go from having the ball at the 4-yard line of Seattle to now the 19, and that stalled and went to a field goal. Number 11. Third time not the charm. This was in the fourth quarter with 7 minutes to go. It feels unfair to pick on Clinton Dix on a day when he had two huge interceptions, but the third one in the middle of the fourth quarter went right through his hands. Do you remember that one, Chuck?
Yeah. Very well. Every one of these, each one of these that you are putting on me right now, it's just driving that stake back in me and remembering it once
it's
again.
Just,
yeah.
It's just so terrible.
I mean, isn't it amazing how many mistakes that they made in that game to not close it out?
We talk about 4th and 26 during the Brett Favre years against Philadelphia.
Yeah, that was January of 2004.
Another opportunity there, and you couldn't defend a pass on 4th and 26. Same thing with the NFC Championship game in 2007, where it was Ice Bowl 2, or whatever you wanted to call it. And the Giants just wouldn't go away. Another situation where the Packers should have been in the Super Bowl in Brett Favre's final year. This one, though, I'm telling you, this one really hurts.
Well, the NFC, the game against Philadelphia, that was the divisional playoffs. Because if they had won that one, they would have went to Carolina. That was another one.
Right.
That was another game where in 2004, if they win that game, I think they win the Super Bowl that year. I think they would have won, but they had to go to Philadelphia, and they had that game, and they gave a 4th and 24, I was planning on going to Carolina because I thought, okay, they're going to go to Carolina, they're going to win that game too, but they obviously lost that game against Philadelphia.
The overtime conversion comes in at number 10. Again, this is J.R. Radcliffe's top 15 things that went wrong in the NFC Championship game between the Packers and Seahawks. The Packers had Seattle on its own 30 in a 3rd-and-6 situation, But Russell Wilson was able to find Doug Baldwin creeping behind the Packers secondary for a 35-yard completion. Mm-hmm. At number nine, our good old buddy Ed Lacy doesn't see it. This was 30 seconds left in the fourth quarter on the final Packers drive when Aaron Rodgers had completed a string of passes and runs for a first down on the Seattle 36-yard line. A miscommunication with running back Eddie Lacy on a screen pass resulted in an incomplete pass. Eddie Lacy had his moments, but not there. James Starks. That's right, James Starks was on this team. 11 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. This comes in at number eight. The Packers were on the drive in the fourth quarter, and Rodgers made a rare throw outside the pocket, lofting a ball to James Starks that glanced off his outstretched hands. It would have resulted in a touchdown. They left a lot of touchdowns out in this game. Here we go. Number seven, Chuck, 3rd and 19. For a fan base that continues to reel from the framed 4th and 26 play, it was yet another blow to the psyche when Seattle was pinned in a 2nd and 31 situation and then 3rd and 19. Green Bay rushed three linemen, technically two, one serving as a spy to watch Russell Wilson. They didn't get any pressure on the quarterback. And again, Russell Wilson connects with, guess who, Doug Baldwin for 29 yards and a first down. Mm-hmm. One more here, and then we'll get to the top five on the other side. Jump and a heave. This happened back in the first quarter, before the Packers took the points on consecutive drives that ended in field goals despite close proximity to the goal line. Aaron Rodgers threw a rare interception in the end zone, picked off by Richard Sherman. But the most frustrating aspect of the play was that it appeared Seattle defensive lineman Michael Bennett jumped off sides, which means Aaron Rodgers felt like he had a free play. That comes in at number six, and there's still five more from that train wreck of a game. It is just...
Let's hear them.
Well, we're late for a break. I want to get to them on the other side.
I want to hear them. I want to hear them all. You know, we've been through all these things already. We've been through many bad things in our sports teams, but, man, if you're going to give me a few, give me them all.
but this insanity, this can never get any worse for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah. You know, we went through them at the time, too, but it's good back in 2014, but it's or 2015, January 2015, but it's always good to relive it.
All right, well, let's get to the top five. We'll do that on the other side. It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. It's a Pick and Save Football Thursday here on The Fan. That's Chuck. I'm Radio Joe. In for Bart. We'll have more coming up next here on The Fan.
With a first and goal to the end zone, touchdown. Devontae Adams, a 7-yard laser thrown by Aaron Rodgers.
The green and gold have high hopes for Thursday night in Seattle.
And we've got you covered. It's a Pick and Save Football Thursday on The Fan. Brought to you by your local Pick and Save stores, where Wisconsin saves on groceries.
Good morning, it's Chuck and Winkler, Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan, alongside Chuck Freeman. I'm Radio Joe Zenzola, part of the Bill Michaels Show. I'm in for Bart today, who's off in Seattle. He'll be taking in the game tonight. So we're going through maybe one of the worst Packer games I've ever seen in my lifetime. From the 2014-2015 NFC Championship game, where everything went... I mean, the Packers had the lead late in that game, and they blew it. And they blew it in so many different ways, and there were so many different things to pick out from all quarters of the game. So we're going through the top 15 list of flaws and things that went wrong for the Packers in that stretch. This was from a piece that J.R. Radcliffe of the Journal Sentinel wrote. So now we're in the top five, Chuck. Coming in at number five was the coin toss. The coin toss itself. Obviously, there's nothing anyone can do about dumb luck of a coin toss, but if the Packers win the toss, they get the ball instead of Seattle, and the Seahawks touchdown drive never happens. They still could have lost, though, had they won the coin toss.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's where they changed the overtime rules then. I mean, if they scored they scored a touchdown anyway, Seattle did.
They still would have lost,
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
even with the new overtime rules.
With the new overtime rules, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
I do like the new overtime rules. I like it better than what it was before.
I get it. I understand it. Because basically, if you win the toss at the end of regulation, all you need is a couple of first downs. You're in field goal range.
Right. Exactly.
So,
no, I think it's fair to let the other team get the ball to. And I think they've got it right in that regard.
But somebody should have came up with this rule a long time ago, because maybe history would have been rewritten.
Possibly.
In many games.
Sure. Sure. So the coin toss comes in at number five. At number four, two troubled linebackers. This was in the third quarter with 4:50 to go. Two of Green Bay's most maligned players both had a role in one of the game's biggest plays. On fourth down from the Green Bay 19, Seattle lined up for a field goal. Former Packer punter John Ryan grabbed the snap, rolled out, and threw a touchdown pass to a wide-open Gary Gilliam. The fake field goal gave Seattle its first points of the game and pulled it within 16-7. I forgot that game was a shutout going into, you know, the late third quarter of that game.
Yeah, when they were kicking field goals early in the game, I was looking at that game and I was like, man, they are trading field goals. They should be getting touchdowns here. This is going to come back to haunt them. It still should have been good enough to win. But, you know, if you want to look back further, despite all the mistakes that they made and chances to get Seattle back in the ballgame, those, you know, settling for early field goals, that hurt too.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of situations where they were inside the 10-yard line and couldn't get into the end zone, and that was annoying. So it was 16-7 at that point. Later on in the game, the Packers would tack on another 3 points. It would be 19-7. So coming in at number three, 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, I think you guys can fill in the blank here. It's a play that has become increasingly considered the biggest moment. Taking a snap from the Green Bay 39, Russell Wilson threw a pass over the middle where Micah Hyde forced a deflected ball off the hands of Jermaine Kearse and landed in the arms of Morgan Burnett. Burnett goes down, encouraged by veteran Julius Peppers, with the now infamous no moss signal to slide, thus killing the play. Now, as we all know, Morgan Burnett had a lot of room to run. He could have gone at least another 10 to 15 yards without being touched.
Might have been able to score.
It might have been a pick six.
Yeah.
And yet Julius Peppers said, get down, get down, get down.
Do you have the time on that?
5:13 in the fourth quarter.
Okay, 5:13, there's way too much game time to get down and take a knee, basically, right there. Too much time.
Way too much time.
We're not talking under 2 minutes to go and no timeouts. We're talking timeouts to be used, and they had a, you know, there was plenty of time game left to be played there. So I don't know what they were thinking.
The Packers ended up going after that interception. They went for a game at that point, but Seattle mounted the comeback. So we go to number two on our list. Ha-ha, Clinton Dix gets lost. This was with 1:25 to go in the game. After Seattle scored to take a 20-19 lead, it went for the two-point conversion. Russell Wilson was flushed out of the pocket by two pursuing defenders, and then Wilson threw an off-balance pop-up towards the end zone. Ha-ha, Clinton Dix, who had two interceptions already in the game, appeared to pause in the end zone and completely missed the toss until it was too late. Luke Wilson made the catch. Even though Clinton Dix was in clear position to break up the play, there's no telling how the subsequent defense series changed if Seattle had a one-point lead, and that was assuming Mason Crosby still kicks the field goal with time winding down. So that comes in at number two. The last one, and I think this is the one we all know, the infamous Brandon Bostic. 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. It's a stretch to say the game was definitely over if this play happens differently. It seems supremely likely that the Packers win if Bostic either follows instructions or makes a simple catch. Bostic, who was supposed to block on the onside kick attempt so Jordy Nelson could snag the ball, instead elected to elevate for the bounce kick, botched an easy grab, allowing Seattle to recover and set up the go-ahead touchdown, which would lead to the end of his job as a Green Bay Packer. And that was the end of that.
Yeah.
Didn't Sean Slocum he get fired too?
Yeah. The fans, media, were all on Sean Slocum for many years as not to being able to. You know, I think the Packers special teams coaches, McCarthy got it. The defensive coordinators usually get it. But then the next up, it's always the special teams coach. Ron Zook.
Well, Ron Zook's feeling it right now.
So Slocum felt it as well before him. But yeah, there's been a few guys that have taken the brunt of punishment from fans who have been special teams coaches, all the way back to the Nolan Cromwell days when he was special teams coach on those Super Bowl teams, the Packers of the 90s.
Yeah. So Brandon Bostic comes in at number one. I just pray that as a Packers fan, that is the worst loss we'll ever experience. And then there's nothing that'll come close to that. Because again, when you go through 15 different things that didn't go the Packers' way, mm-hmm. or things that they just screwed up on, it just can't get any worse than that. Especially in a game where the Super Bowl is on the line and you've got a 2-score lead with 5 minutes to go and you can't close them out.
We did this a couple of months ago here on the show, the toughest loss for any of our state teams. Mm-hmm. That's losing to Denver in Super Bowl 32. That's still, because that's a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. That still is worse. Now, you lost this one in a more bizarre fashion. I'd say losing in Super Bowl 32 and the Badgers losing in the Final Four to Kentucky in 2014 when Harrison hit the three-pointer for Kentucky, I think Wisconsin would have won the national championship that year. That hurt worse than losing to Duke the following year. The 2014 National, the Final Four loss to Kentucky still was the toughest one to me because the national championship was right there because they would have beat Kentucky on Monday.
Badgers were in control in that game against Duke. They should have won that game.
Yeah, but that one didn't sting as much as the Kentucky one.
Yeah.
And he got Kentucky back the next year by beating them and ending their winning streak. But still, I when we did this, I still said the Kentucky Kentucky beating Wisconsin in the Final Four of 2014 was still the toughest loss for me.
It would be nice to have a championship in this state from our teams. Let's ask you guys at 414-799-1250. Do you think the Packers are going to win tonight? What's your prediction? What's the key? He's Chuck Freeman. I'm Radio Joe. It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins. We'll take your calls coming up next here on The Fan.